Radio makes sense, doesn't it, ladies and gentlemen? It's so logical, and it's so punctual. That's what we love about it. And it's actually what I love about it. It's about the extent of it, too. This is Southern California, and summer has arrived. You know, you may have, unless you were in a cave, you certainly read or heard the dire predictions that this was going to be a summer beset in California by power rolling blackouts. Not the band, the actual event. And in the event, it has not happened. And there are a couple of explanations proffered for this. One is that we're just good conservers, unlike Dick Cheney, who thinks conservation is just for the proclaiming of virtue. We actually conserve because that way we don't have to pay as much for the electricity we are being overcharged for. And the other reason is because it's been a cool summer up to now. I think today is the official start of summer here in California. So if I, any time during the, I asked, you know, ACOUTS. I'm delighted to see that somebody takes the advice I offer on this broadcast seriously. A few months ago, I noted that California Governor Gray Davis, and never has there been a first name so apt, Gray Davis, was scoring, as they say in the newspapers, the power generators for overcharging California for electricity and therefore making obscene profits, these power generators that were headquartered mainly in Texas. And I said, well, rather than sit here and just complain about it, dip into that state budget, buy some stock in those companies, let the taxpayers share in the profits. Well, the state didn't do that, but apparently some of Gray Davis's advisors were listening and said, yeah. So they indeed profited and have been slapped on the wrist and told, go there now, don't do that again. Advisors on the power situation. Speaking of which, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you noticed this. It was on the business page. We don't pay attention to the business page anymore since the market went down, do we? We just slide right by it. The PG&E Corporation reported this week that its profit tripled in the second quarter of this year. This is interesting, not just if you happen to own stock in the PG&E Corporation, but because its subsidiary, Pacific Gas and Electric Company, has filed for bankruptcy, saying it can't pay its bills because the power was just... So... The subsidiary, which itself made a profit in the second quarter of the year, it filed for bankruptcy, and the parent company earned $750 million, or $2.07 a share, in the quarter. That's way up from the last year. Now, one of the ways that they made this money, you'll be happy to know, it previously overestimated how much its subsidiary would be charged for wholesale electricity, so it just wrote that as money it didn't have to spend, so that was a profit. And then it also collected payments on power contracts that were canceled by customers who were worried about doing business with its bankrupt subsidiary. So bankruptcy has been good for PG&E Incorporated. But, you know, when a parent lets a child go bankrupt and doesn't dig into its own coffers swimming in money to support said bankrupt offspring, I believe that entitles PG&E Corporation to be known henceforth as America's first corporate deadbeat dad. Hello, welcome to the show.
Stop for a minute. Stop for a minute. A shadow on my heart, and I don't enjoy the time we spend apart.
a change. Come over me, fell in love with my own reflection, yeah. How does it feel beneath your own wheel? Feel like an accident waking up under a bus with my fingers crossed. Now is the time we could make it up. So you lost the fear, it wasn't that bad. Left to your own devices, yeah. Still a young girl, eyes on the clock, tick like a motor running out. Magnets and words up on the fridge speak to the poet in all of us. But I miss the page that you thought about. Drew in the frost on the window pane.
Thank you.
the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the August 5th edition of Le Show. And before I do anything else, and I've done so much else already, I want to remind those of you living in Northern California that tomorrow night, Monday night, as this broadcast is being heard in Northern California, is, I won't say it's your only chance, but it's certainly your first chance to see my film Teddy Bear's Picnic at the Wine Country Film Festival in Sonoma. I believe either good tickets are available or they're all sold out, one or the other. So you figure it out. You figure this out, too, while you're at it. This is not just to people in Northern California. This is to the entire listenership around the world. You know, we like, in the radio business, we like the broadcast to be carried internationally. Not so much for the ability to reach people in all cultures and in all corners of the world and to transcend national boundaries, but just because it's so damn much fun to say around the world. Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder, I bet you missed this. This is from a few days ago. Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder and leading energy companies formally signed an agreement about a week and a half ago to shut down Germany's 19 nuclear power plants, making Germany the world's largest industrialized nation to willingly forego nuclear technology. This is comes to light, or came back to my attention, the same week that the House of Representatives in this country passed President Bush's energy plan, which not only calls for drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and $34 million in tax incentives to energy companies, but also calls for a revival of the nuclear power industry. But no, let's follow Germany, really? Though it could take decades to complete, the plan underscores the divide between Europe and the United States on environmental policy. After the signing ceremony in Berlin, Schroeder said that although it is up to every country to design its own energy policy, naturally we would hope that many follow our example. The nuclear shutdown must be approved by Parliament. Schroeder's party holds the majority. It limits nuclear plants to an average 32 years of operation. That would make most of the modern plants close around 2021. Germany would join such nations as Italy and Austria in abandoning nuclear power. Hey, which side were we on in the last war? What the hell is going on here? Makes you think, doesn't it? Or not. Or makes you just plug in. Speaking of which, speaking of energy, speaking of principles, listen, you know, Dick Armey. When's the last time you heard me quote Dick Armey? Or any Dick Armey? Or any army. This morning on Fox News, I believe, said, I don't have the tape, standing on principle, you get nowhere. Man, chisel Latin concrete above all of the buildings in D.C. because, all right, so George W. Bush, we have finally nailed down the fact that, yes, he was in favor of a salary cap when he was a Major League Baseball owner, but he's not in favor of a price cap on electricity in California or to the western states. Well, he is in favor of certain kinds of intervention in the market, even when it concerns energy. Here's George W. Bush's reaction when the OPEC oil ministers announced this week that they are reducing supply, acting as a cartel to reduce supply to the marketplace. Quote George W. Bush, "It's very important for there to be stability in a marketplace. I've read some comments from the OPEC ministers who said this was just a matter to make sure the market remains stable and predictable," unquote. That's right. Otherwise, the price would have gone down. Stability, ladies and gentlemen, you see, in the marketplace. But it's still a marketplace. It's just been jimmied and jiggered a little bit. Hi, I'm Jimmy Jiggers. And, hey, here's something that's happening in the marketplace. Oh, what, should we go to the digital? We have, no, we have more important news first. Following up on a couple of hobby horses here from the English newspaper, The Observer, airlines will be ordered to hand out health warnings with tickets for long-haul flights as the British government acts to end the scandal, that's The Observer's word, of deaths and injuries caused by deep vein thrombosis, also known as economy class syndrome. The British government is now convinced there is enough evidence to link potentially lethal blood clots with hours spent in cramped plane seats. So as you get on the plane, warning, you shouldn't be flying on this plane. That's a good warning. That's useful. Thank you, airline industry. And remember that successful test of the missile defense system a couple weeks ago? We already established that the we knew where the supposed enemy missile was being fired from and its trajectory, and it was only carrying one little decoy as opposed to the dozens of decoys real enemy missiles might be carrying to confuse our shield. One more little piece of information has now come to light. The rocket fired from Vandenberg Air Force Base just north of here was carrying a global positioning satellite beacon that guided the kill vehicle toward it. Come, baby, come on, come on, closer, here I am. So, Lieutenant General Ronald Kadish, the Air Force officer in charge of the program, said on the eve of the test he was quietly confident about the outcome. Okay, good deal. This Pentagon just recently confirmed the role of the GPS device to a reporter for Defense Week magazine. Kadish later acknowledged each of the previous three tests, two of which failed in any case, had also involved the use of a guidance beacon. So let's just get the rogue states to put GPS beacons on their rogue missiles, and this thing will work out just fine. Don't you think? Did I ask you? Oh, yes, I did. Hey, Anthony Hopkins has purchased an L.A. area. L.A. area? What does that mean? It's all L.A. An L.A. area home for about $3.8 million. He was knighted by the Queen of England in 1993, but he became a U.S. citizen last year. So that knighthood is the bunk. He bought a Cape Cod-style home built in the 1950s on a bluff overlooking the ocean. The five-bedroom, 4,000-square-foot home on about an acre with a pool also has a master suite with a fireplace, spa, and sauna. He has spent many years working and living here, most recently in the Santa Monica area. Hey, babe. I bet that's where the home is, then. It says L.A. area. That just is, I don't want them to know where I live. And I can't blame him. But then stay out of the paper. Tell your realtor to keep the thing out of the paper. Actor Tom Jane in Original Sin? Yeah, I think it tanked at the box office, so that's not... The longtime Topanga home of actress Lynn Redgrave and her ex-husband is on the market at $2.3 million, but her ex-husband says he doesn't want to sell. All right, well, forget it then. You know, far be it from me. A listener sends me, apropos of my tirade last week about the, I didn't say conspiracy, did I, among the airlines to deprive us of oxygen while we're in flight and substitute whatever stale crap is floating around the cabin. Here's an emailer from Santa Rosa. Hey, I'll see you at the Sonoma Festival tomorrow night, won't I? An emailer from Santa Rosa says, if you want improved air on your flights, try this trick. Purchase a CO2 meter, it's a little electronic device, on your next flight, take it out, and measure the air. I can't remember what the minimum FAA level is supposed to be, something like less than 1,000 parts per million. When the flight attendant sees you, he or she will tell the captain, and voila, more fresh air will miraculously be made available. P.S. Some people wonder if the increase in air rage incidents is directly related to the recent oxygen cutting of the airlines. A CO2 meter. Okay. I'm not going to get involved in another one of these Freon discussions, but I'll look it up. I know you can't carry a hammer on board. I found that out. Hey, I'm totally innocent hammer carrier. You remember I told you I got tendonitis in the elbow. Well, one of the exercises involves, look, see what I'm doing with my arm? it's radio. I'm sorry. Well, I have to do that. And a hammer is the perfect kind of simulation of the weight thing that I have at my physical therapist. So I packed a hammer in my carry-on bag and scared the people at San Francisco Airport who confiscated my hammer. All right, now, ladies and gentlemen, enough about me. Let's talk about you and that digital wonderland you're entering into. Here are two wonderful, wonderful portents. First of all, that digital television transition, I think we've slowed it down. You and me working together. Backed by powerful allies in Congress, the nation's broadcasters are pressuring federal regulators to relax that government-mandated transition to digital television in May. The National Association of Broadcasters met with the FCC officials seeking a simplified way to obtain exemptions to the May 2001 digital TV deadline. Only about 200 of the nation's 1,600 TV stations have made the transition to digital. The association also seeks to cut back existing digital broadcasts, claiming they cost TV stations $10,000 a month in electricity, even though few consumers have the TV sets necessary to receive digital pictures. Save electricity, huh? All right. FCC officials declined to comment. Regulators have grown increasingly frustrated with the slow transition to digital TV. Aww. Talk to me, babe. Talk to me about your frustration. By the way, did I tell you I was in a TV showroom recently, a couple weeks ago, and there was a digital TV demonstration. I think they had CBS. CBS's supposed, what was fake high def. It was a regular signal that was either squeezed or something was done to it. It looked crappy. But it was on that, you know, wide screen. And the audio was a second and a half out of sync. Good work, boys. And Sony's Music's entertainment division has been testing an anti-piracy technology that renders illegally copied CDs unlistenable and may blow up your speakers. Thank you, Sony. The anti-piracy system called Cactus Data Shield was developed by an Israeli technology company. Research conducted by the British New Scientist magazine says Cactus adds noise to the music data stored on the CD. Cactus flags the noise as control information, which means it's ignored on playback, but on duplication, the noise disrupts the copier's error correction system. The result, a CD full of noise, not music. And the generated waveform is of the kind to which hi-fi and loudspeaker circuitry is particularly sensitive. Play the noise-filled disc back at too high a volume, and your speakers are toast. The ability to damage equipment can be effectively switched on or off by the CD mastering company. The tests were carried out in Slovakia and the Czech Republic. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, aren't we all glad the Cold War is over?
20 long miles from town, my old car broke down. The clutch is shot and the sun is so hot. Oh, what I'd give to be home. 19 miles from town, my old car broke down. The battery's dead, man, like I said. Oh, what I'd give to be home. Handbell slipping and the engine's missing. Oh, what I'd give to be home resting my bones. 17 miles from town, my old car broke down. Just my luck about the fuel pump stuck. Oh, what I'd give to be home.
With the sun so high up in the sky,
and I'm trying to get home to my baby.
When I
to go, it's got to go, and I don't mean maybe.
16 miles from town,
my old shot broke down. A tire's down, no spare around. Oh, what I'd give to be home.
From MSNBC, Reasonable Doubt, Law, Lawyers, and the Law. It's like burden of proof without that woman. Here is legal commentator and commentating lawyer, Jerry Spence.
Well, it's been 90 days or so since Chandra Levy went from the
back rooms of the Capitol to the front porch of American cable television, and now, like some inner tube floating in the swimming hole, the tragic story of this young girl's mysterious disappearance seems to be running out of air. No clues, no witnesses, no suspects, no press conferences, with the noble and notable exception of the poor girl's parents. Is it time to stick a fork in this one and move on, or can we realistically expect to harvest another month or so of plausible chit-chat out of the legal, political, and, let's just get on our highest horses here, moral implications of this case? With me today are three attorneys who are always delighted to take a chunk out of their billable hours to come on television and dispense free advice. In New York, the great criminal lawyer, now moving exclusively into civil practice, Johnny Cochran. In Miami, the distinguished defense attorney and, if you believe the feds, attempted embezzler of the government, F. Lee Bailey. And in our Washington studio is the only attorney on television who plays the hair card as flamboyantly as I do, the great conservative Lightning Rod Ann Coulter. Well, Johnny, is the Chandra Levy story over? And if so, whose fault is it?
Jerry, let me tell you, first of all, who not to blame.
All right.
And that's the Washington, D.C. Police Department. Now, you know me, Counselor. You know I'm not exactly the poster boy for support your local police. But there is a member of Congress involved here.
Yes.
And the police budget is controlled by Congress. And if I wanted bullets in my patrolman's guns next year, I might let the congressman's attorney roll me a little bit, too.
So they've let the trail go cold. Called it on a delicatessen turkey. Called it on a Stoli Frappuccino, Jerry.
Bailey, does the public lose interest when the actual news content of the story approaches zero?
But I don't think it has to. Could we not, if we desired, step back and lavish greater time and attention on the larger issues implicit in this case? Issues like, are lawyers on television often enough? Just, for an example.
Well, how about, why can't Democrats keep their hands off their interns?
Well, Ann Coulter, you see the double tragedy, the possible death of the story and of the girl herself, as a political issue?
Jerry, I see the size of Larry King's shoulder pads as a political issue. That's my job. But if this story dies, the person who deserves to bear the brunt of the responsibility is this Democrat congressman who seems to believe that the best way to service his constituents is horizontally.
Now, you see, Jerry, because I've been a talk show host myself, I can see the value here. Getting back to the topic, I think there's a good 2 or 3 weeks more in the question of whether we're being fair to Congressman Condit.
Fair? The man should be strung up by his Calvin Klein bikini briefs. But to directly answer Johnny Cochran's question, I don't know about anybody else, but I'm available all through August to keep this up.
Lee, if we are at the point where blame is to be assigned...
Well, Jerry, I don't think we ever left that point.
All right, fair enough. But do we in the media shoulder some of the blame for this story's attenuated shelf life?
Yeah, look, I think the media are always to blame when something like this happens. That's, if you will, is it not one thing that does give a Chandra Levy story added heft is just the ability to turn around when all else fails, as it's doing here, and take the time to discuss our own culpability. That's a very important part of this discussion, and we are we not in the very best position to do so.
Well, but Lee, the media were basically doing the bidding of the Levies. You know, they're the ones who held more press conferences in 3 months than George W. Bush has held in his whole life. I think what you have here is the media acting in a very exploitative, a sensationalistic way, to be sure, but doing so for the very best of motives.
Well, and the ratings for all the news channels have gone up this summer, and all the executives say it's not just the Chandra Levy story. Is that smoke being blown up our rear ends, or is it just naturally foggy back there?
Jerry, I think the ability of people like myself and Barbara Olson and even Laura Ingraham to get back on television is is good for women. It's good for conservatives. It's good for women conservatives. So
if you were here to discuss, I don't know, embryonic stem cell research...
Fine, no problem. I think any attorney who can't do the heavy lifting necessary to have a strongly held opinion on a given topic on a moment's notice, you know, just doesn't belong on television.
Some of us are here. I should remind a good lady on the sheer power of our charisma.
Well, that's very fine, but I can't let what Mr. Cochran said earlier about the police go completely unanswered. I mean, this is a police force that decided that the way to get crackheads off the street was to give them guns and put them in uniforms, so...
Jerry, I've been waiting for 7 years to say this, but now who's playing the race card?
Well, these are exactly the kind of sparks we'd all love this story to continue to strike. I want to thank my guest today for tackling the question of how to keep tackling the question. I'm Jerry Spence. Join us next time for more Reasonable Doubt.
Reasonable Doubt is a production of MSNBC. We're the headliners and legends, people.
Well, it's too.
He could clean the record. No, I did that. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. And thanks to a listener or two, we have some different trades represented today. And this is what we like. And by we, I mean me. If you have a trade magazine you subscribe to and find something interesting about your industry, send it along to Le Show 11... What is the address here? 1900 Pico, PICO Boulevard, Santa Monica, California, 90405. I never mail anything here. Well, how am I supposed to know? Anyway, from Candy Industry, the magazine of the candy industry. We'll start off with them. Tobacco company to test cigarettes. Mint-flavored nicotine lozenges. I'll read it for you. Stronger than your average mint, particularly since it contains compressed tobacco, Arriva mint-flavored lozenges should start appearing in the Richmond and Dallas areas in late summer or early fall. Developed by Star Scientific, a small tobacco company based in Chester, Virginia, the lozenges, dubbed cigarettes, me Reich, contain compressed tobacco and mint and eucalyptus flavorings. They are designed to provide smokers a jolt of nicotine in non-smoking environments, the company says. A box of 20 lozenges will sell for about $3, about the same as a pack of 20 cigarettes. Sarah Mackier, spokesperson for Star Scientific, says the product will be marketed strictly as a tobacco product and not as a candy or mint. Hence the notice in Candy Industry News here. Well, if cigarette smokers want a nicotine jolt in a non-smoking situation, I got a better idea than mints. Does the phrase preparation tea mean anything? Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, onward. This is a follow-up story. Thanks to Traffic World magazine. Yes, there is such a magazine. You heard that the Ku Klux Klan had been in Missouri's Adopt a Highway program. That made the news. This didn't. This is in Traffic World. The Ku Klux Klan has been kicked out of Missouri's Adopt a Highway program for failing to pick up litter along its adopted road. This was just a month after the U.S. Supreme Court said Missouri had to allow the Klan to participate. Missouri Department of Transportation spokeswoman Megan Casalone said the Klan never picked up anything off the highway. Groups in the Adopt the Highway program are required to pick up litter 4 times a year. Is that it? 4 times a year. The Klan originally filed to be part of the program in 1994, requesting a half-mile stretch of Interstate 55. The Klan did not respond to a letter from the Missouri Department of Transportation informing them they were not complying with program rules, according to Casalone. Not only are they racist, they can't even pick up the litter. What kind of a Klan is that? A question might occur to you, ladies and gentlemen, when I read the trades for you, a copyrighted feature. Also in the follow-up file, we now learn why CBS News may not have been avid to cover the Chandra Levy story. The New York Post, a reliable news medium owned by Rupert Murdoch, says Dan Rather has emerged as the leading candidate to land a blockbuster exclusive interview with Representative Gary Condit. A slew of networks and cable stations have been in competitive negotiations with officials from Condit's office for the summer's must-get exclusive interview. CBS has been extraordinarily responsible, said a source in the Condit camp. And finally, in the follow-up file today, 5 months ago, election officials in Palm Beach County, Florida, turned their attention from last year's controversial presidential balloting to the spring election for dozens of municipal offices. As they prepared for the new local election, they wiped out computer files showing how each ballot was punched in the presidential election, removing that information from the public domain, even as scholars and journalists began to analyze the results of Florida's presidential voting. Palm Beach, of course, was one of the key counties in the 5-week recount process. The files were the only computerized record of the way the county's tabulating machines registered each ballot last November. The punch card ballots themselves weren't destroyed, but they were handled a lot. So thank you, Palm Beach. Again, thank you, Palm Beach County. Ladies and gentlemen. All right. President Bush did announce and declare some victories this week as a result of... How many times have you received from your liberal friends the email that purports to show that all the recent Republican presidents except Nixon were dumb and all the recent Democratic presidents were smart? It's amazing. I was on a conservative talk show a couple weeks ago where the host cited a Michael Medved opinion that conservatives were rational, whereas liberals tended to be emotional. That's how they make their arguments. And this is the liberal equivalent of that rubbish. Because IQ tests, A, last time I looked, liberals weren't that fond of IQ tests in the first place. And B, IQ evaluations of people who never took the test. Thank you. Anyway, George W. Bush declared some victories this week. Twisted the arm of Republican Congressman Charlie Norwood, the point man on the Patients' Bill of Rights in the House, until Norwood said, well, actually what he did is he called Norwood up to the White House, laid some flattery on him, and then said, all right, I've kissed your, I believe he said, kissed your ass long enough. What can you do to make this a bill I can sign? And wouldn't let Norwood out to go meet with his Democratic colleagues on the bill until Norwood had stood at a press conference with Bush and heard Bush say, we have an agreement. Then the Bush operatives got the Teamsters to believe that there are thousands of jobs available to them if we drill for oil in the Alaskan wildlife refuge. So the House approved, as I said earlier, the energy bill. So some legislative victories, and with that, with the noise of those victories ringing in his ears, the president retreated to, or advanced, depending on your opinion, to Crawford, Texas, for a month-long vacation, working vacation, so they say. And maybe even time to take a phone call from 41.
Hand me the list of passwords here, will you, Shane? Thanks.
Hello. Hey, 43. You don't need the password. No, it's you. You're on my speed dial.
41. Just sitting with Dick Cheney here. Take it in the splendor of nature as it unfolds in all its beauty here in the ranch.
Yeah, well, you guys aren't cooking up any oil drilling off the coast of Maine, are you?
Of course not.
Listen, don't want to rain on your drought down there, but why don't you spend a little of your vacation time up here in God's country?
Listen, I'm on a roll, you know, yeah. Six months status report looking pretty good for a fellow a lot of people thought wasn't even elected president.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm entitled to a lot of time in the countryside that I love most, where, you know, just to drive the Alaskans a little crazier, we're not drilling.
Well, anyway, yeah, congratulations on the victories in the House. Notice you don't call me when you're winning.
Well, you know, changing the tone of our nation's capital takes a lot out of a guy, but I was going to call.
Uh-huh.
You know, the chain man and I do want to pick your brains on a couple of foreign policy situations. Now, how about this?
Yeah.
You know, I haven't even shared this one with Chains yet, but this is straight from Rumsfeld.
Uh-huh.
You know, the only time you get the two sides in the Irish conflict or the Palestinians and the Israelites to buckle down and do business together is when they're in the same room together.
Yeah, that's called a summit, but they can't risk the embarrassment of holding one unless you know you got a deal.
Well, I know that. That's how Clinton got screwed at Camp David last year.
Yeah.
What do you think? I don't remember my own briefing cards?
What?
Gee,
what?
But, you know, look at here.
Yeah.
41.
Mm-hmm.
The risk of failure is lessened if the framework for the meetings doesn't fit the old paraglide. See, we got to break out of all this Cold War thinking that summits are run a certain way.
Mm.
What if we invited the Northern Irish, the British, the Israelites, and the Palestinians all to one big old face-to-face?
Well, first of
you
all...
You know, everybody thinks the other guy's problems are pretty easy to solve.
Yeah.
Pretty soon you have the Irish working on the problem of the Jewish settlements and on the other room, and Mr. Arafat and Mr. Sharon, you know, they're having a good old time drawing up a new parade route for the Orange Order.
Well, might work.
Hmm?
Don't think it's the kind of thing you do, you know, first or second year.
No, of course not. We're strategizing for year three this week. You know, Carl said we needed to think inside the box, but to make the box bigger.
And I went out on the new boat yesterday.
You'd
have loved it.
Yeah.
Had some cod brought in from Nova Scotia. They seed the bay with them now. And we caught about 20.
Yeah, because I was going to say, because your cod...
No, long gone, of course.
Yeah. Well, 41, I got to say, I'm feeling pretty pleased with myself. You know, we flipped Charlie Norwood on Patient's Bill of Rights.
Yeah, well... That's the way I heard it. You told him you'd kissed his butt long enough.
Here's what he had to do to get his name on a piece of damn legislation that I'd actually sign. You know, that's all these guys care about.
Yeah.
Then I got the Teamsters to come over on Alaskan drilling.
Oh, hey, listen, if the Hoffa kid comes back, you know, for a more intimate visit, which, you know.
Yeah.
Do me a favor. Ask him if he knows what happened to his old man. You know, when I was at the company, we used to drive the FBI guys crazy because they didn't have a clue.
Yeah. So, look, in terms of charting a new path of bipartisanship, we're doing pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I just think I need a little guidance as we head over to the Senate, you know, with all this stuff, which is to say, you know, how do we recalibrate this bipartisan thing when we start having to deal with a whole other party?
Well, I won't say it's not tricky, but, you know, you got a great guy there, right there on the ground. Dick Cheney's in the Senate every day, isn't he?
The chain man? Yes, sir, he sure is.
Well, he's looking the Dems right in the eyes.
He's basically... spending a lot of his time trying to get the Senate cafeteria to do a low cholesterol version of that navy bean soup. So
yeah, well, you know, to me, the key to dealing with the Dems.
And you know, I know you had your own problems with them. They kind of rolled you on the tax thing.
Well, look, this is kind of long range, but
no, please, I'm a tabula rasa, as they used to say at Yale.
Well, when you've got the Irish and the Israelis and the Palestinians all at that one big meeting a little ways down the line, why don't you invite some top Senate Democrats to sit in?
You think?
Well, they eat that international stuff up, and you know you can hang the failure on them. Now look. Speaking of international stuff, you're not going to break or walk away from all of our treaties, are you?
No, of course not. I mean,
because I remember, Dick Cheney wasn't too hot about treaties back in when I was in the Oval.
No.
So,
but you know, but Colin and Condoleezza Rand, they think we should stay with the Panama Canal Treaty, for example. So I think that's the way we're leaning on that.
Yeah. Okay, but that was Carter's treaty.
But yeah, but the idea of even-handedness is there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, look, you can use this month off to prepare the country for the fight with the Senate this fall.
I know, that's kind of what I think. But, you know, Carl says the less the country sees of its president this August, the better they're going to like me come October.
Yeah.
You know, he feels my likability is best in small doses.
Hey, you know, up here where we've actually got water, you're as welcome as the lobsters anytime till it freezes.
Well,
you know, then we'll...
Okay, I'll talk to you later this week. Give my love to Mom.
All right, well, you tell Laura she's doing great with this literacy deal.
Will do.
Bye-bye.
Some pain and misery. Now you standing on my doorstep. Tell me, Dean, how much you need me. Ain't nobody home, girl. Ain't nobody home. How many times I beg for you to come home? Let me alone. Through my burning tears, I saw you walk away. Now you beg me to forgive you, but this time, baby, you'll turn to pay. Ain't nobody home, girl. Ain't nobody home. You'd come back someday, but time has made some changes, turned me upside down. Now you can beg me to forgive you, but this time, baby, you can turn right around. Ain't nobody home.
This is Los Angeles. This is Southern California, ladies and gentlemen, whence this broadcast originates, and the Los Angeles Airport Commission has decided the depictions of giant nude men etched into the granite and terrazzo floor at the American Airlines terminal can remain. Meanwhile, in New York, the Decency Commission has met and recommends, well, the commission hasn't met, but a subcommittee of the Decency Commission of the City of New York has met and recommends less money for museums. No comment, department. One more reminder. Tomorrow night in Sonoma County. In Sonoma, I think. The Wine Country Film Festival. I'll be there, won't you? For the Northern California premiere of Teddy Bear's Picnic. That concludes this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations. Over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ, the planet at 7.415 megahertz. An announcement to come about another exciting way to get Le Show, as if there aren't enough, and on your computer whenever you want it at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like having the Arab oil ministers control the electricity market in California to create some stability. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty. Thank you very much. Couple of reminders. Playlists for this broadcast have returned to www.harryshearer.com. And the email address for this broadcast, and if you send me an attachment, I'll break your neck. But the email address is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show internet services courtesy of Steve Mack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.